My name is Tori Whitaker Martinez, and I'm the lead editor for Infection Control Today. And today we have a very special guest with us today. We have Cherie Busby, who is a dental assistant, speaker, and trainer. And she is also a member of Infection Control Today's editorial advisory board. And we're going to talk about dental assistant
Dental Assistant Recognition Week.
Yes, dental.
That, let's talk about that.
So I'm really excited about this. So thank you, Cherie, for being with me today.
You are so welcome. Thanks for asking me.
So dental assistants are often the first line of contact with patients. What role do you think they play in ensuring infection prevention and safety protocols are followed during the entire routine dental procedure process?
So a lot of people don't realize like what happens behind the scenes, right? When you go to your dental office, when you say I work for the dentist, they're like, oh, you're a hygienist. I'm like, no, I'm a dental assistant. So there's two completely different job designs, if you will. And dental assistants do more than just assist the doctor. Like, we are responsible for setting up the rooms, breaking down those rooms, following the whole chain of infection control, like from start to finish, right? We're responsible for our hygiene friends do the same thing. They're also responsible for infection control, right? But the dental assistant is the one primarily that cleans the instruments, gets them sterilized and then repackaged back to use for the next patient. So it's a lot of stuff happens behind the scenes when the patient comes in. You go to your dentist and you sit down, it looks like it's magic. But there's this little dental assistant running around with their hair on fire, him or her, their hair is on fire, right? Making all that stuff happen. So there's a lot of responsibility. And one of the unfortunate parts, and whereas I'm on a mission to help, is education for dental assistants. A hygienist has gotten their associate's degree and then gone through hygiene school. So they have a lot more college-based education. Dental assistants in this country, most every single state, you can work and do infection control without any formal training, right? So they are learning on the job from each other. And some of it's not so good. I mean, we learn from each other our bad habits too, right? But it's a big responsibility that they've taken on. And I think this week, Dental Assistant Appreciation Week, right, DAR, is when we get to celebrate dental assistants. I personally think DAR should have 365 days a year to celebrate, but that's when we do it right now, though. But to answer your question more directly, I guess, is it's a huge responsibility for them to take on.
I didn't realize there was such a difference between the two. So thank you for explaining that. I really never knew. They were just people walking around, and I just assumed they all did the same thing. So that's pretty interesting. Dental settings involve constant exposure to aerosols, instruments. So what infection control practices are most critical in your daily work or when you were working there to protect both patients and the dental team?
So the dental team's defense, the best defense, is proper use of PPE, right? You gotta protect yourself. And it's funny, I'm doing a webinar for the Association for Dental Safety next week, and in a couple of weeks rather. And one of the things I'm talking about is proper use of PPE, right? Because you'll go in and you'll find this self, and you'll find yourself that it's so hot, like you are wearing a jacket that covers you from your neck to your out to your wrist, all the way down to your covers your lap. And then on top of underneath the jacket, your regular scrubs, right? So you got two layers of clothing on. Then you got your gloves. You know, we mostly use nitrile gloves. Then you have a mask that's covering your face. And then you have your safety glasses. So it looks like you're going in a full-on hazmat right here, just to do every single part of your day. And in our medical teams, They have to follow PPE, but not to the extent that the dental world does, right? So our PPE protects me from your germs, but it also protects you from my germs. Like my mask, if will protect both ways, right? So PPE usage. The other things that we do for our team, and I mean for our team, is to keep instruments and surfaces clean, right? That's a really thing because just the flu can live 48 hours on a surface, right? COVID-19 can live up to weeks on a surface. And we were just talking about my mom is has late stage Alzheimer's, and we had a C. diff scare a couple of weeks ago. C. diff can live up 5 months on a surface. Your patient could and not even know that they have C. diff, and then they touch things, right? You take the handbag from them and hang it on the hook, or they put their hand across the back of the chair, or they shake your hand, right? So all of these things kind of live. So it takes incredible cleaning to do that and to do it correctly, right? To use your disinfectants in the proper amount of kill time. So there's the whole process of reprocessing, I'm sorry, the instruments, so making sure clean and then they're packaged correctly, going through sterilization and then back to the patients. There's this whole, like I said, behind the scenes thing that happens for the dental assistants do to protect themselves and the patients. That was a big long explanation. There's no little words for these questions. I'm just telling you.
No, and you're right. I always think about your column when I go see my dentist, the Clean Bite that Infection Control Today hosts, and I absolutely love it because every time I walk in there, I'm like, oh yeah, this is what she meant. This is what she meant. And I just love that. So just a little plug in there for that,
Thank you.
and to thank you. Yeah, you're most
It
welcome.
does make me laugh though, because my first column I wrote about the suction. I called it the little suction thing. And then, like, if you're watching this, please don't close down on the little suction thing. Backwash, and it's not a pleasant thing. So my friend Tori says, I go to the dentist, I'm laying there, and she says, close, and I'm like,
Yeah,
I
matter of
love
fact.
it. But those are things that are designed to keep our patients safe, right? Is
Right.
to have that knowledge and that understanding. So, like, oh,
Exactly. It was
that's so
funny
funny.
because my dentist and I actually talked about that at length because I told him about your article and I told him, I said, I don't want to do that. And he stopped. I was shocked because I said, no, I'm not going to. And he stopped and we started talking about it. And he explained that, yes, we have the reverse thing so that it can't come back. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool, like that. But what about the people who don't know about this?
Right.
You
And
know,
not
maybe.
everybody's using backflow prevention, right?
Right.
Maybe their offices are old and they're not equipped, or maybe they don't want to spend the money because it's another disposable product that you have to arrive, right? So all those kind of things,
The
but
next question is from instrument sterilization to chairside assistant. Dental assistants manage many responsibilities. You've talked about them. So which part of your job do you think the public or even other health professionals may underestimate the most?
the amount of tasks that have to be done between every single patient, right? And those tasks are not just cleaning and sterilization. They are responsible for writing the notes. Most offices, the dental assistant is the one who makes the bulk of the documentation for the visit. And then the doctor goes in and says, yes, this is right, makes whatever changes, and then they sign it, right? So all of those kind of things, they keep track of if you have a lab case, they've got to know, they've got to have it sent to the lab, they got to get it back, all these kind of behind the scenes administrative. And this is on top of the very stringent infection control guidelines. Like dentistry has crazy amounts of guidelines for infection control, and they're very specific too, right? So there's just a lot more that dentistry does then I think our colleagues that work in hospital settings, if you work in the operating rooms, you do that. But generally, working in the doctor's office or even some outpatient centers, you may not have that same level of duties that each individual has to do. So like in the hospital setting, you're going to have a person who's only responsible for infection control. You're going to have a person who's only responsible for cleaning the room. You've got another person who's responsible for documentation. You've got another person who's responsible to make sure everything, the supplies and all these things are there, right? But a dental assistant does all of these things. All of these jobs is what a dental assistant does. And it seems to be seamless because you come into their office and you sit down and they're smiling and asking you how your day was and educating the patients on dental procedures. But in reality, they're doing way, way more jobs than that. And that's why Dental Assistant Appreciation Week is so important, to recognize and to honor dental assistants all over the country, actually all over the world, because I don't care if you're in Timbuktu or you're in South Africa or Zimbabwe or Asia. It doesn't matter. Dentistry is dentistry is dentistry, right? And while some countries are not quite as stringent on infection control of things like that, but there are some processes in place, and the dental assistant is the one responsible for carrying out all those duties. And I don't think that the general public understands or even recognizes that it's not magic, right? There's people there that are struggling sometimes to get all these things done.
Because you only have so much time in the day.
You only have, and I'm going to plug this too. Do you know the dental assistant, for the most part, is the lowest paid individual in the practice?
I laugh because that was my very next question.
Is that the next? Yeah,
Really
we are
was.
the
So
lowest paid
I know.
in the practice. And the business team members, they don't get much more, right? So when you go in and you think like this person is I guess the median wage is around like $20 an hour, but there are some states that the dental assistant is still only making $17, $16 an hour. The pay scale is very low. Other states, if they have like an expanded functions capability, in other words, those dental assistants are able to place filling seat crowns. Now, those assistants are making like $30, $35 an hour, right? And this all depends on where you live across the country. People in the upper northwest, northeast, like New York, New Jersey, they're going to make more. I'm in Florida. We make diddly squat,
Ohio too.
right?
Ohio.
Right. We make diddly squat. And it's so sad that the person who is running around the most, the person who has the most duties in the practice,
Is
is the lowest paid. It's really sad.
a friend of mine, one of my oldest friends, she's been a dental assistant for, well, since we graduated, so 30 some years.
Oh, I need to know your
And
friend, so make an introduction.
I will. And she was looking to change places. Her dentist was retiring. She started there in that practice, right out of, she went to like a career center in school. So she did those 2 years, and then she went on and she worked for him until he retired. And so she was trying to find another place. And I thought, well, I'll help her, because I have time, I'll help her. I was stunned, appalled. Just, I mean, even the fact that she'd had 30 years of experience meant nothing, nothing. Everything she applied to was anywhere between $17 and $20.
Yeah, it's really sad. It's really sad. And the Dental Assistant National Board, DANB, is working to help legislation to make like a higher pay for dental assistants, because there is so many jobs. And the other thing we're working to do, I say we, I don't do it, they are doing it. But I'm a big voice for these things, right? I want it to be out there. Is to have standardized credentialing And also standardize education requirements, because I'm in Florida and I hold a Florida radiology license that's from 19 blah, time, like before God. And so I hold this license, but there's no educational requirements for me to work in this state. After I got my credentials back in 19 blah, 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 then I'm not required to have any CE, not even for infection control. And this is not the only state, right? The only way that I could, let's say I'm going to call this self-imposed CE requirements, are that if I hold a DANB certified dental assistant recognition, which is the only place you can get that is through the Dental Assistant National Board, or I currently hold a CDIPC, which is certified in dental infection prevention and control, right? So I hold those and I have to have like a ton of CE every year in infection control for those. But those are self-imposed. They are not required in the state of Florida for me to do my job. You know what I mean? So the Dental Assistant National Board is helping with legislation to kind of get the dental boards on the same page as far as that credentialing is. It's been a long time coming, and it's tough. I mean, think about legislation on the state level. And and here's the deal: minimum wage will go up. So people at McDonald's, I don't remember. I saw a state the other day. It's like, I don't remember now. It's like $15. Like you can make $15 at McDonald's, but then your friend who's got 35 years experience as a dental assistant going in, they're all going to pay like $17 or $18 an hour. Like I can flip burgers and not be responsible for anything that's affecting a person's health care for about, I mean, come on, come on. There's something wrong with this.
Right. Or putting yourself into
Yes.
harm's way,
Right. Because do you know
and
how many people left the profession when we had the COVID-19?
yes, that was
People dropped out of healthcare like flies.
I know.
Because we are in the line of fire in healthcare for all these communicable diseases that, and some of them are coming back. I mean, look at measles and whooping cough. Holy cow, whooping cough was wiped out of here back in the 40s. And now I got whooping cough a few years ago. You know what I mean? Because it's back. We are in harm's way.
Right.
But a dental assistant isn't compensated for that,
Right.
for being in there. And it's just a sad, but there's other ways of compensation too, right? Maybe not just hourly, but some practices or DSOs offer benefit packages. So you have to kind of look into your compensation to what other benefits you have, right?
That's true.
But
That's true.
it is a
Sometimes
sad state.
that can make up the difference.
It can,
At
it
least try.
can. And if it's like your friend, okay, 35 years, she was so happy in her position, and she probably got raises throughout the years, but I'm gonna say she probably wasn't making 35, 40 bucks an hour,
She wasn't.
right?
She
She
was.
wasn't, because the job doesn't, it just like caps out. And I see it all the time. A hygienist will say, well, I'm not gonna see any more patients unless you pay me $50, $70 an hour. I'm like, seriously, and your dental assistant that you're asking to run over there and help you perio chart, take your x-rays, clean your room, all your kind of things that you're leaning on your dental assistant to help, is getting the lowest paid. You know what I mean? It's just sad. But I don't know. I didn't know we were going to go down that road, but you can tell
No.
I'm very passionate about this.
And that's fine. And that's good because these are things that absolutely need to be talked about.
They do.
You've talked about being in the profession for a long time. And so I'm going to ask you this. Infection Control today's, this is their 30th year in publishing their magazine. Yes, I'm so excited. So I'm going to ask you. 30 years. How has dentistry changed in the last 30 years, specifically infection prevention, but as a general whole as well?
OMG. So now you're going to know really how long I've been in dentistry. Okay. I'm going to say 42 years out loud and proud. Back when I started, we wore no gloves. We had no PPE. I had this cute little jacket that I wore, right, just to keep my clothes clean because stuff is flying all over the place. We would take our burrs, you know, the little people, and if you're not in dentistry, you know, they're kind of drill bits or little drill bits. And we would alcohol them off and put them back on a burr block to use for the next patient. We had an autoclave, but only a surgical instrument went through there. Nothing else did. They were just cleaned and you know, disinfected in some cold sterile, that kind of thing. But it wasn't like it is. And then AIDS came around. And so back in the early 80s, AIDS came around. And so that's when PPE was first introduced, right? So we got some PPE, and then like, oh my goodness, well, now we have to kill AIDS, not even thinking about TB and you know, MRSA, all these things that are around. We're just going to talk about killing AIDS now. So then the CDC came out with the guidelines, summary of infection control for dentistry, and that came out and gave us some guidelines about sterilization and everything, packaging, cleaning, surfaces, whatever. OSHA chipped in and then came out with the bloodborne pathogens, like early 90s, I'm gonna say is when that was. I probably have my dates wrong here, but I know it was early 90s when OSHA came out with the bloodborne pathogen standard, which once again laid it out in how to protect the employees, which was the PPE, the housekeeping, laundry, sterilization, all those kind of things. So we went from nothing to now we wear a hazmat suit for every patient. You know what I mean? Like they're just the changes in technology. Steam sterilizations is still the predominant method of sterilization in dental offices, tabletop autoclaves, you know, that we use. But those have come a long way too. Like now they're so automated. You just put it in there, close the door, press a button, and it's there. And back in the day, we had to like make sure the little timer dial was right on the right thing, and then make sure that the door was closed with the, what is that called when it has the wheel that you twist the door closed, you know, all those kind of things. You know what I'm talking about? Well, all of those kind of things back in the day. And it's just a crazy amount. And now there's such regulation around it too. Before you just did your thing. Well, now your local health department can come in and make sure you're doing your thing, right? The local health department. And so all of those things, all this regulation has been the change over the last 42 years that I've been in dentistry. It's crazy amounts of just infection control. And holy cow, now you got to have a cough station. We never had a cough station in the reception area. You know, somebody came in dripping and they're like, you got a tissue? And somebody's rooting around in their handbag to find a tissue. Now you got to have cough station. I mean, you know what I mean? It's just all these kind of things that have been designed to protect not only me as a team member, but as the patients who come in to see us. I know that was a lot of stuff to throw in there. And
No,
we're
that
not even
was
talking technology, baby. We're just talking about infection control.
yeah, that's crazy. No, that's absolutely perfect. I do have a question though. What is a cough station? I've never heard that.
Oh, well, the CDC put this out, and like when you cut your patients coming in, then you should have hand sanitizer, napkin, or tissues, and a mask ready for them to use, and then a receptacle to throw away their dirty tissues or their dirty masks when they come in. So if somebody is sick, you know, you don't want to see them routinely for dentistry. If you can't breathe through your nose, it is not a good day to have a filling. I'm just telling you, right? But you'll have family members that can come in because the mom can't leave all the kids home to bring one in, you know, that kind of thing. So a cough station is there, and you can get a poster on the CDC that's just Google CDC cough poster, and that's supposed to be posted in your offices. Wash your hands posters, all of those kind of things are available on the CDC website.
And necessary, very
They're
necessary.
all necessary. I mean, good grief. You go to a restaurant, it says employees are required to wash their hands. Back in the day when they weren't required, we did it because it's good hygiene, right? But it wasn't had to have something posted on the mirror in the bathroom when you go in there. So
Yeah. I have a
times
question.
has changed.
You're not kidding. What do you do I mean, I know you're a dental assistant, you're not the dentist, but I'm going to ask you this anyway. What do you do when a patient comes in and the dentist suggests that you're going that she needs or he needs something, and the patient refuses? What is the protocol after that?
So the first thing is, most people refuse things because they don't understand the need. And then they don't understand the need, and then they don't understand the benefit. They don't understand how this procedure can help them. Let's take a crown, for instance. Okay. You could go into your dentist and you have a very large filling that could be broken or just leaking, especially if it's a silver filling, right? It could be leaking around there. And your dentist will say, you need a crown. And you're like, this tooth doesn't bother me. I'm not going to do nothing about it, right? So then the dental assistant or the doctor may not go into detail and tell you, okay, here's what can happen. Do you see, using a photograph, do you see this leaking around the margin? And then do you see this little crack? That right now it's not broken, but there's a crack. And so you're going to bite down and it's going to break. So most of the time that's what happens. So you want to educate the patient. You have to help them make a informed decision, if you will. And dental assistants, sometimes we lack the verbal skills to do that very well. And God bless our doctors. Sometimes they get so involved in the technical part too, that they're not excellent communicators. So when somebody, you educate them, that's the first protocol is education. Then the second call is if somebody doesn't do something, then your dentist, I would expect them, they should be following up, right? So if you say, okay, we told you needed this crown, then at a minimum, when you go in for your next cleaning, they should talk to you about that crown again. Right? Because sometimes it's been proven it takes 7 times to hear something before we even start to listen, and then 8 times before we start to believe it.
Yeah,
Right?
I
And
would
this
expect.
is where that benefit comes in. So if you need this crown and you don't do it, here's what's going to happen. But if you do it now, you can prevent breakage of that tooth. You can prevent infection of that tooth. You can prevent just pain from having that tooth when it breaks, because you know what? It's not going to break on a Monday morning at 10 a.m. when you can get in your office. No, it's going to do Friday night after everybody's closed, and then you're suffering for the weekend, right? So the benefit of having that crown restores your tooth to function, and then you don't have to worry about those things happening,
Yeah.
right? So somebody needs to follow with that. I would recommend that you follow up like every 2 weeks. Like say somebody came in, they had an exam, the doctor says this is what you need, the patient left. That office should be following up with you in 2 weeks to say, "Hey, I want to follow up. I want to say, do you have any questions?" Because maybe people, I think they get a little overwhelmed, especially when you have this treatment and then you have a monetary investment, right? Like if you think about it, we don't think twice about, oh my God, that big old gigantic 4D Ultra HD TV is on sale. I want to go buy that. So we don't think twice about that, right? Because your whole family will benefit. But that same type of money that you're going to put into something that's about this big that nobody benefits from you, that's a hard sell, right? That's a hard sell, especially to maybe it's we're all working mothers, but maybe it's a single mom who needs that, who doesn't have child support that's helping her or whatever, whatever. That's a lot of money for me to put out, where that crown would buy 10 pairs of shoes for my kids, right? But what the mother maybe is neglected to tell her is that, okay, how do you feel when you don't feel good? How does the treatment of your children, how can you function in your day to day when you've had a toothache? If you ever had a toothache in your life, you don't function very well, right? So you have to help them see the benefits of doing that. And you can do that through follow-ups in 2 weeks, 2 months. every 6 months, whatever that follow-up would be in the practice.
I went to the dentist once, and I think I've told you this, but I'm going to say it again. I went in and they wanted to do a deep clean on all my teeth. They said that they all needed it. And I said no. And I said, they said, you have to. And I said, no, I don't. And I said, well, okay, I'll tell you what, I'll get a second opinion. They didn't like that. And it wasn't that I couldn't, I mean, I'm not in dental, but even I could understand why this could be needed. And so I went to a different dentist. The different dentist said, no, you don't need this. And, he says, you have a couple that are four. You have like two that are four, the rest are ones and twos and threes. Okay. But what the reason I even asked the question was because she said, you have to have this done. And I'm like, but that becomes a medical issue that this is my body. What would you say? Would you have said that? You have to have this done?
Oh no, because you're free to choose anything you want to do. My job is to give you the education to help you. My job is to give you some facts and to tell you here's the facts and here's the benefit, right? That's my job. You are an adult. You make your own decisions. I'm hoping that you'll make the decision that the doctor feels is in your best interest, right? Because I'm never in my 42 years, I'm going to say I don't know anything about this office that you went to, right? I don't know anything, but there's always one bad apple is going to spoil the whole bunch, right? Just like everything. However, I will say this, that the practice of medicine in general, dentistry, is a little bit more specific, but every medical provider has an opinion based on their experience, their training, and their experience, right? So one doctor may say, this is the guideline that I'm following, and this is my opinion. The other doctor may say, okay, here's the guideline that I'm following, but my opinion is a little bit different. Maybe I'm a little bit more conservative than the other person, right? But everybody's got their own philosophy. And it's up to you as an adult to take in that information and to ask questions. Like we go and we sit down and we just have a tendency to have the white coat syndrome. And this happens not just in the medical office in dental. Like I'm going to the doctor and when I'm in the shower and I'm washing my hair and I'm thinking about all these questions. By the time I got to the doctor, I forgot my questions, right? So they say, do you have any questions today? And I'm like, no, I'm good. And then I get back out. I get in the shower the next morning. I'm like, dadgummit, why didn't I ask those questions, right? So it's up to me as a consumer, as a patient, to ask questions. And if you find a provider that like gets mad, as you said, or something, then maybe that's not the place for you. You know what I mean? But I think that the doctors, in my personal experience, and I've worked with hundreds of doctors over my career, right? They don't routinely prescribe. I'm going to use that word because it's a treatment recommendation. They don't do that unnecessarily. Like 99%, 99.5% will only give you things that are medically necessary, right? And whether you it's up to them though to help the patient to see that medical necessity. And in dentistry, it's a lot easier to do that because we have photographs, we have scans, we have x-rays. We're in medicine. You just have that doctor's opinion. Like they'll push on your tummy and say, yeah, I feel like you got a little bowel blockage. So let's go do this routine, right? And you trust them. But somehow dentistry, we're not afforded that same level of trust. So we have to use all of our We have to use all of our resources, our diagnostic tools to do that. And so I don't know what to tell you. Well, I did tell you, find a new dentist, right?
You
When you
did.
told me your probings. But when you're when listen when you're in the office, like especially if you're in a hygiene visit, and they should be, this is my personal opinion, but it's also backed up by science. Your hygienist should be periodically, and I'm say periodically, like annually or every 18 months, checking the pocket depths around each of your tooth, right? So the pocket depth is like where your gums will go up to your top, and we think it stops there, but no, they fold on each other like it's like a the neck on a sweater, right? So this pocket depth should be 1 to 3 millimeters is very healthy tissue. 4 millimeters is like you're getting inflammation in there, and it could be that the gums are swollen, causing that, right? 5 millimeters is true bone loss. And so that means that you're losing bone or teeth. So your hygienist should be checking those pocket levels periodically, annually, every 18 months, whatever. And the American Association for Periodontology has got guidelines for that. They're used staging and grading now, which is like another diagnostic tool to help the patients to understand. But when you're there listening to those numbers, like you said, all you heard was 1113, 1114, 1113, 1113, 111. Those are pretty healthy. And so anybody can look it up. Like if you want to make a search on you can just say, how do I know if deep cleaning? Right. And the AI search will bring you up. This is the criteria. So educate ourselves, right? We need to do that. And I would give the office the benefit of the doubt and keep asking questions. Like if you find like, okay, I really like this doctor. I don't understand this. Why I don't understand why you're saying that I need this deep cleaning. Why are you telling me I have to do that? If I have to do this because tomorrow my teeth are going to be in a glass. I mean, tell me what is the long-term prognosis, right? So as consumers, as patients, we are res it's our responsibility to get our information by asking questions.
Exactly.
That was another long explanation,
No,
but
that was perfect.
it's not, there's not a cut and dried. Should you just cut tail and run, right? It's a, maybe you like this practice. Maybe you've been at this doctor forever. Sometimes though, it could be that you've been at the same doctor forever. We could go back to your friend that retired for 35 years. I would maybe venture to say that doctor did not keep up on modern technologies,
Yeah, that's a good point.
right? They don't know. They're not taking advantage of scanners. They're not taking advantage of AI and dentistry. AI and dentistry is, oh my goodness gracious, it is like turn the world. It's open possibilities like nobody's business. And so maybe they're just not doing that. Maybe the hygienist that you've seen all this time has not been doing complete periodontal probing. Then you go to a new office that has a more advanced training. Maybe they do complete periodontal probing, and then this is uncovered. That happens all the time. All the time that happens. So they're either using their tools to the fullest or they're not. And so you don't know. You don't know.
Well, and that's one reason why you go get a second opinion. And there's nothing wrong with
No.
a second opinion. And a good doctor or dentist will suggest if you're really concerned about this, then go get a second opinion. I've
Yeah,
seen that many
here's
times.
five of my peers. You go talk to these five peers.
And I think the one thing that got me was that one dentist said, you have three, fours, and fives. Okay. The other dentist, and both of these people are young enough to be my kid. So, in their mid-30s, early 40s, okay. The second person said I had ones and twos. I had one four out of my whole mouth. So how do you see the difference in this? And I think that what bothered me most, and there were a lot of things, and we've talked about this. If you've read any of, if anyone's ever read your The Clean Bite, then they know what we're talking about, because she had nails on. She had fake nails on. They got upset with me when I asked them about their sterile processing, process when I walked in. So of course they were already had their backup. They were already upset, and all these questions. And then I had heard her say to someone else, she goes, "Well, what if I don't want to?" And it's funny because this happened before I went back. She goes, w This other patient says, "Well, what if I don't want to have that deep cleaning done?" She says, "You have to have it done." Those exact words were said to me an hour later. Maybe you understand why I refused to go back to her.
I do. And here's the other thing too. So perioprobing should be comfortable, a comfortable procedure, right? And it's done, you take a little probe that's got millimeter markings on it, and you just slide it around the tooth. And where, if there's areas that it hurts, then the pain would be an indication of a little deeper pocket. It's also very subjective because you'll have a brand new hygienist out of school who's scared to death they're going to hurt somebody, and so they won't go as far as they need to, right? They're so afraid they're going to hurt somebody, and they're like, I can't do that. They're going to hurt. So it depends on how heavy the hand is
Yeah, that makes
when
sense.
they're
That makes
probing,
perfect sense.
right? Once again, it's subject to that person's experience level and their training, you know what I mean? But once again, never be afraid to go get a second opinion. Just don't. And I know it's one of those things that, okay, my insurance only pays for one exam and now I got to do another one, right? So you can ask the first office for your records. I want my tr records transferred to this new doctor. A lot of times they're required to do that too by law, and it has to be within 30 days. Like actually, some states it's 15 days that they have to send those records over. So you can have them transferred. And then there's some offices that will do a consultation, a free consultation. But even if you do, and you have to pay for it, a lot of times it's really worth that investment, right? It really is. But you just got to keep in mind, just like general medicine is subjective, dentistry is somewhat subjective too,
Sure.
right? Although we have tools, diagnostic tools that we can pull up quickly. You know what I mean? Doctors have diagnostic tools too that they use, but dentistry is like the patient can read these tools. A patient can look at a photo. A patient can see a scan. If you're using AI on your x-rays, a patient can see that. It's very clear. And that's the great thing about AI. It does not tell your dentist that something's there, it helps you to see it. Right? There's a little difference there, but because your dentist can look at that x-ray without the AI and tell you what you need, right? They all can do that. But the AI is really a great patient education tool
Yeah.
because it will mark like how deep the pockets are. It will mark if there's decay. It'll surround it if it's decay, or it'll color it in or something like that. You know what I mean? So it's very easy for, it's very patient friendly, patient centric, I guess is the word for that. Very patient centric. But yeah, take it upon yourself to ask questions. Don't do like I do when I'm in the shower. Like, take a moment and write them down, especially when you've had a not so great experience and you're going for a second opinion. You want to take the time to write down the things that you felt didn't go well, or you need more explanation on. Write them down and take it to you. It's the same thing like you're going to have a difficult conversation with somebody, right? write down your bullet points so that you don't get like Tori and I and just go down rabbit hole after rabbit hole, right? You want to arm yourself, and as a consumer, as a patient, that is our responsibility to do that. Nobody's going to do it for you, right? It's our responsibility. And if your office is not comfortable with that stuff, then it's probably not the right office for you.
Right, exactly. All right, I'm gonna switch gears here for a second. And we only have a few minutes left, but I wanted to ask you about Chicago Midwinter Dental Society. How did it go? I'm
Oh
disappointed
my gosh.
I didn't get to go this year.
It was so exciting. It's so exhausting to go to a large show like that. But I presented two brand new classes for me this year, and the first one was the patient experience. I'm going to have to tell you that was one of the most difficult classes I have ever written. It took me months and months and months to write this content, and I think we were talking earlier at the night before I was tweaking things, right, just to make sure. But I felt like it was very well received, and I don't have any surveys back yet, but the feedback from the line of people that was in my after the class is over, the longer the line, the better your class was, right? So that's a really awesome thing. So the patient experience went over really well. And we talked about all these things that you and I just discussed too. And then my other class was on supplies management, and it's really great because I had presented that class a couple of weeks earlier, and the godmother of dentistry, Linda Miles, was in the class, and I asked her, I said, "So what do you think? Did I do okay?" She said, "You taught me like three things I never knew." I'm like, "Oh my gosh, I taught the godmother, right?" But anyway, so it was very well received, and it was a great time. And there's so many, you're so busy. There's so many people that you want to connect with when you're in that environment, and so there's so many like. The person is like, you notice the person and they're deep engaged in the conversation. So you do the back hug kind of thing. Hey, love you, bye, this kind of thing. But it's so energizing. Like I was struggling in my personal life, caring for my mom and writing this big content class. It was no lie, kicking my butt. And then to get there and have it be successful, it's so invigorating for that to happen. So now I feel like a renewed sense of self. I'm not as stressed as I was, right? But it's a great feeling. And then you go and you learn something from somebody new, right? You go and you see suppliers and you sit in on a class or two if you can. I'm like, seriously, I learned some really great things about AI and clinical documentation. I'm like, oh, I need to put those things to my next presentation, right? So it's such a learning experience, and just meeting people, like expanding your circle, if you will.
Yeah, well, that's where you and I connected. I mean, we didn't
And
actually get to meet, but that's how we connected, was through
we
the last
did.
year. So I was so excited.
Yeah, me too. I'm so honored too, and I never knew I could write a column. Like I'm like, I'm a dental assistant. I don't know. What do I write about? So sometimes I'm really inspired by th different things, and I read a lot. I read a lot of dental publications they have people from all different walks that go in there and talk about like they'll talk about AI, but maybe they're talking about AI in a business format or something, or maybe there'll be one of I got to meet all of my he infection control heroes, like people I've been stalking and following that are now a part of my circle, because I went to the meetings. I was able to connect with them right there, and that kind of stuff. And it's just such a great experience. It's expensive as all get out, but if the doctors take their team members, then the team members learn something that's it can be immediately implemented into their practice on Monday morning. And I'm hoping for my patient experience class, I gave them things that they could start Monday. And so I'm hoping to hear back that this helped us with our patient experiences and our business is doing better, because come on. It's a business. That's why you got, that's why they had to pay us to be there, right? But it's a business, but it's a business that has touches people's lives very intimately, and you want them to have a great experience. And so it just overall, take your team, it'll pay for itself.
That's awesome.
Just saying.
My last question is, as we celebrate Dental Assistance Recognition Week, I said recognition right that time.
I'm so proud of you.
What advice would you give to someone considering becoming a dental assistant, especially those that are interested in, patient safety and infection prevention?
Come into this, like I heard my friend Kevin Henry, no, David Rice said this, you're never going to make $1 million in dentistry. Like, you're not going to. So it's not one of those professions that you're gonna, buy the big house on the lake or anything like that. However, go into it. We dental assistants will say, I love my patients. So that's what it is. Love your patients. Love what you do and educate yourself. Because in my history, remember, I started before we wore gloves, right? And education was not easily attainable back in that day, like it is now. Like I think I said this on another podcast that I did. You could take a class on your phone, on a tablet, from the beach in Aruba. Right, you don't have to go to Chicago midwinter or the Hinman convention in Atlanta. You don't have to go to these places to get education. It's readily available right now. Take advantage of it, because especially new people, new baby dental assistants coming into the field, there's so much more to learn. When you're in school, they barely have time to teach you the basics of tooth numbers and instrument identification, right? So there's so much more to learn. Never stop learning. And you have to go and you have to seek it out. It's not going to come to you. So seek it out and go and learn and grow. And then mentor somebody else. You don't hold the knowledge to yourself. You need to take that knowledge and then share, make somebody else's life better. And that's what my goal in life right now is, just to make everybody's life better.
And you do a wonderful job.
Thank you. I'm trying.
Thank you so much for joining me today. This has been so much fun.
It has. I appreciate it.
I was
Happy Dental Assistants Appreciation Week, everybody.